Hi, welcome to Reflections. I wanted to talk in this episode about the link between religion, spirituality, and well-being. And I find it quite fascinating, actually, because one of the areas that I studied and did my master's in was in race, culture, and difference. And one of the aspects I found in that research was how little spirituality and faith was taken into account in the mental health services, whether that was clinicians working with clients or even the research itself. Over the last weekend, when I had my deep dive into BBC iPlayer, I decided to watch a range of programs that explored different religions in depth. So I looked at the Hasidic Jews, Christianity, some communities in East Sussex who were Christian-based organizations that live as a community, into the Muslim faith, people converting from Christianity to Islam, and last night more on the Mormons. And the one thing that, of course, unites all religions is they all have a set of ideas and beliefs about God, Christ, our reason for being here, and how we live life, and the kind of life that we live, and the kind of rules that sometimes we need to adhere to. Because I find, some religions can be and cultures can be closed, tight, and restrictive, and some could be more loose, open, and have more freedom within that. And of course, this is a unique and different experience and perspective for everyone that I come into contact with. I come into contact with a lot of people who define themselves as spiritual, and the whole spiritual movement has been an interesting one because lots of us who were interested in spirituality kept our ideas about spirituality and the movement of spirituality under wraps, as much of this was either seen as weird or conflicted with some of the religious beliefs in different religions about what's okay and not okay. But I came across some research recently, the Gallup research, that found a strong association between global mental health and well-being and spirituality and religion, and was largely underexplored. So the research, based on a poll of 152 countries and interviews with 1.5 million people, sought to shine a new light on that. It revealed a strong association between the importance of religiosity and spirituality in the lives of people and their well-being. Religious spiritual people were seen as having more positive emotions and optimism. Gallup estimates that 160 million more adults worldwide have positive experiences than would be the case if they were not religious. Religious spiritual people reported as being more satisfied with their social lives, having opportunities to meet with people and friends and relatives that they could count on. They also reported greater civic engagement, scores like likelihood to volunteer their time to others. Now, we know that most religions, the Sikh religion, Hindu, the Mormons, all have this idea about service and giving back. So the report explores also the paradox of declining religious identification in a time of mental unwellness, and argues we must reconsider the role of faith and spirituality in combating mental health crises. Now, I'm not sure. In terms of, I've worked in mental health and well-being for over 25 years, originally training as a psychotherapist, trained in NLP, hypnosis, and some of what were seen as the weird and wacky approaches to supporting people moving from sadness to happiness, from melancholia is the terminology that Freud would use, to, having some sense of joy in life. And I've seen this idea about religion and spiritual play out in lots of different ways, because I think on a deeper level, we're all influenced by a set of beliefs that have been influenced by the politics, the census laws, and the religion that sort of oversees ideas about law and our existence as human beings and our morals of what is right and wrong and what's okay and not okay. And also, it does have a strong association, if you listen to people like Jordan Peterson, between how we keep order and what happens when we don't keep people in order. And the fear that, if we let people just freely run around doing whatever they wanted, then it's a totally different issue. Now, also, we have to also consider what mental health and well-being means. They're not the same thing. The mental health or mental illness industry, started by Kraepelin in his early research into the mental institutes across Europe, where he started to look at the symptoms that people were displaying and started to come up with categories to define what those people's experiences were, which have also shifted and changed. If you look at things like the DSM, which is the Psychiatrist Diagnostic Statistical Manual that is used in the clinical settings, has also changed over time. We're on session 5, and I'm going to be talking more about mental health, the DSM, and well-being in other podcasts, because when we take a deeper dive into the norms and not norms and standards of society, we also need to look at what we deem as mental illness or difference, or how we manage people who don't fit into those norms. So the idea about mental health has also changed in the last 100 years, and we can look at that through a clinical perspective, but also we need to look at it through the lens of a social perspective. Because if you haven't got enough money to pay your bills and you're struggling to get food on the table, the chances are you're going to feel stressed. If your children are not doing well at school or have additional learning needs and are not getting supported by teachers, you're going to feel additional stress. If your children are exploring relationships and things happen within those relationships that causes them challenges and concern for you as a parent, you're going to feel stress. Stress is at the forefront of most of the issues that we face when we're thinking about mental health. And I think the idea is that things like schizophrenia and psychopathology and psychosis are a much smaller percentage. But we've now, in this last couple of decades, sort of put people through the lens of mental health, when actually we know that physical, mental, emotional, spiritual health are all interrelated. We know that our health can deteriorate if our mental health isn't great. And we know that our mental health can suffer if we have conditions like heart disease and diabetes. So there is, we know, if someone's having a hypo and their mental health and their capacity to think at that time is seriously interfered with, just as if someone has got a water infection, can look like they're having an episode of psychosis. So our understanding about that, it's a very complex, deep arena. And what I often have taught when I'm teaching mental health to professionals and in schools, we need to think about mental health as a continuum, our own resilience and our own risk factors. So with every young person and adult that came through my service, we looked at what are the factors, what were the strengths for them in their families, where were they doing well, and where were the weak spots, and where were the resiliences, and how well did they bounce back from difficulties. We also know that the underestimated impact of being bullied at school massively impacts someone's sense of self, their self-esteem. And I've worked with many an adult whose issues within the workplace actually stems from their experience of being bullied and isolated at school. And sometimes it only takes one teacher to make you stand up and humiliate you in front of the rest of the classroom. For that to stay with you and mark your psyche for a very long time. And it can take a lot of us who may have been introverts and shy, who were forced to stand up and talk in front of people and hated doing so, as I did when I was at school. Takes us a lot of work when we decide to go back to college, as I did after the birth of my second son. I think I was about 27 at the time when I went back to college, and I then had to talk in front of people and share my ideas, and that did create a lot of stress for me at the time. But that was, you know, the strong associations with our early educational experience is also something that is really underestimated, and its impact of that, just as we know with adverse childhood experiences. So it's called ACEs research, that if you've grown up in an environment where there is aggression and domestic abuse, for example, or parents are serious alcoholics and drug addicts, and your needs have been ignored or even neglected, that the chances of you having issues in later life, or even attachment issues and them manifesting with some difficulty in relationships, there's a higher likelihood of that. We know that. But we can't use these ideas about our understanding of what's coming through the research and mental health to make a sweeping statement of what makes us struggle and what makes us okay. Because we have our own individual personalities, our own blueprint. And in the spiritual world, we talk about our blueprint as our past and current experiences and the patterns that we live by until we become more aware of how our ways of being as children and the things that got in the way. Sometimes we have to work through those so we can either start to reinvent ourselves or really tap into the true core nature of who we are. And that includes how we see ourselves and how we define our own identity. And of course, we're going through massive transition when it comes to how we see our identity as being not so fixed, but on a continuum. Spinelli talked about that in his work as psychotherapist, philosopher, that identity isn't necessarily fixed. We love life experiences and decide how we define ourselves according to the information that's available and also who we're in contact with at any one time. So schooling and our early childhood experiences massively influence whether or not we're going to be happy and healthy, if that is what we are aiming for, because we do have happiness studies, or whether or not we are looking for just a well-lived life. And we then have to decide what that might look like. And a lot of the people I come into contact with, their well-being is influenced by the fact that they went to university and did the course that was not suited to their talents and skills and strengths. And they may have found out after 4 years that actually the reasons they got depressed and struggled with their mental health was because actually they were totally out of alignment with a course that just didn't suit who they were as a person. For other people, it can just be that they've experienced a particular lifestyle or work way of being, and then their soul wants to expand and reach for a different existence. And that's sometimes why people in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, when cultures and lifestyle and class was more fixed, and you lived according to whatever group you grew up in. And people would sometimes reject that and go in search of their selves, like eat, pray, love, you know, that sense of deeper dissatisfaction with life, or realizing that it doesn't matter how many handbags and pairs of shoes you've got in your cupboard, that you can still feel satisfied, dissatisfied, and unhappy at the end of the day. So it's an interesting to link religion and spirituality with well-being. And I think there is a correlation. And I certainly saw the difference. I worked. There were 50 schools in the area where I worked, and I worked in at least 15 of them. And the one where I saw young people who seemed to fare better, even though they were in large families, people were dying, there were issues within the families, and there were hardships, seemed to fare better in the faith schools than some of the non-faith schools. Can I say that definitively down the line? No, but that was my experience. And we can all entitle to our own experience and how we view that. So, what I do know that when I've gone through difficult times, and I was going through a really difficult time back in 1999, I was coming to the end of my studies, and my relationship had literally fallen apart for various reasons. And I was incredibly depressed and was feeling very emotional. You know, it was the end of what was a 12-year relationship, and I still had small children. And I was going in the only direction that I felt was the right one to go in. And I remember a friend saying to me, you know, that sometimes when we're in complete moments of dark, we need a little bit of light. And that just meant lighting a candle. And that was how I was connecting with my sense of whatever I define spirituality to be for me, because it has changed over the years. And often we need some belief in something bigger than ourselves, and don't want to think that our time here on earth is wasted and that we all have a purpose, which I believe that we do. And sometimes that purpose is really obvious early on in our life, and sometimes it comes out much later. I mean, I certainly was going to get into communication in some way, unbeknownst to me, because I was very shy and reluctant to really share much about what I felt and thought when I was at school. But, you know, luckily we take risks and we grow. And sometimes that's what, you know, mental health can be charged with lots of anxiety. People don't realize it's perfectly normal to get anxious about moving on from things that have been known, familiar, and moving into a new job, a new city, and making friends. And it was interesting watching the program on the Mormons last night, because one of the key things that went on there, and when I was watching a lady that was converting from Christianity to Islam, is they all had somebody that they could go and talk about what they were struggling with, and they had peer support to help them with those different stages. And those transitions were understood by people who were older than them that had already been through the process of whatever life changes they were making at that time. Because your teenage years, as you're thinking about what subjects you want to do, let alone what whether or not you want to go to university or what job you want to do, there's so much pressure put on young people to get it right. It's absurd. And the amount of stress that I saw with year 11 students who were really stressed at making sure they got all the highest scores to get to the best university, when actually what are we doing in a high proportion of cases? Putting people into university that may be better suited to working and doing on-the-job courses, other people who are kinesthetic learners who are better to working in industries that involves mechanics, engineering, as we knew that years ago. Not everyone is designed to work in a particular way. And this is the message that we're not sharing with young people about how do they really connect with their learning style, their traits, their strengths, and their passions. And of course, we're not going to make everything that we're passionate about into a job. But it certainly is a way that we support our mental health. The happier we are at the things we're pursuing, the better our mental health is. But our mental health isn't just an inside job. If we're in a family where there's lots of toxic behaviors and arguments and fights, of course that will affect our mental health and create anxiety and depression, as we've seen with lots of women who've experienced domestic abuse. It massively impacts their mental health. Many end up going to see the GP to get antidepressants, and many leave those relationships, sometimes with drug and alcohol misuse issues as well. So that's an extreme version of how our environment can make an impact. If you've got a boss that is micromanaging you and not supporting you for your own growth, or you feel inhibited to share some of your own concerns about your own productivity and what's influencing that, then that again will massively impact your mental health. I know that early on in my career, when I wasn't as confident at speaking out and talking about the things that I found difficult, in particular when I went into the world of the office, because prior to that, I was working in hotels across the UK and I loved those jobs. And I liked working as a chef and I liked waitressing, I liked working behind the bars. I was really good at organizing and working with people. So they played to my strengths. But when I started working in offices, it was a very different world. And that's where I was a fish out of water. And it took me some time to transition. But it went well. The transition was harder. It was a bit tougher. The same as the transition of going into motherhood. There are some blogs that I've got on my website about motherhood and different transitions we go through. But I just wanted to share these key findings from Gallup's Faith and Wellness, the worldwide connection between spirituality and well-being. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to sharing more.